Well, this time 4 weeks ago exactly, Storm Éowyn was battering the country, the biggest windstorm in living memory and breaking so many records. And as we're all being warned, we could see more severe storms like this more often in future due to climate change. Now, George Lee, our environment correspondent, has been looking at the impact and the cost of this storm. It was just enormous. I mean, even reporting on it here 4 weeks ago, the scale of what was happening out there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was just completely different.
I'm not even sure that some of it is, I mean, people are still dealing with it, really. 4 weeks is a very small time. Like, yesterday, I think it was, we heard from the insurance industry, Insurance Ireland, and their figures are showing that at the moment they have about 24,000 claims in, and they think the industry are saying that the running costs at the moment is up to 197 million euro of those claims, but they think it will go higher, and that that could mean that it could end up being, well, one of the most expensive. I think nominally, if it goes over 300 million euro, it would be the most expensive. But in real terms, it's not. We've had, you know, kind of when you adjust for inflation, it would only be the fourth. Like, actually, the most expensive weather impact we had was a cold winter, the coldest winter for almost 50 years. And that was in January 2010. And the outlay from the insurance industry on that occasion was in today's money, the equivalent of 385 million euro.
So even more than the storm.
Oh, much more than the storm. And there, if you take flooding, another huge, huge cost, the second highest would have been in today's term, it would have been severe flooding in November 2009. It was 244 million euro in insurance claims then. That's the equivalent to 313 million today. So if you're comparing the two, these other, like, floods and cold weather are much more expensive in terms of the damage they do to private infrastructure, you know, burst pipes and so on, than the storm. But this is running very, very high, and this, because it was all over the country, it certainly is a very, very expensive windstorm.
But the impact on public infrastructure, particularly electricity, water, broadband.
Yeah, I mean, that really does stand out. And you look at, say, we can see what happened with ESP and so many people out, 770,000 homes out. And I think that they were in total shock. When you look at what ESP are saying now, as they look at it, they feel that teamwork really worked for them. It was a very, very useful thing. They had 3,700 electricity poles that were replaced, 700 kilometres of transmission wire and 800 transformers. And their high voltage network, which is those huge pylons, they couldn't withstand the wind. So they were in complete and total shock. So they had to call in so much assistance. So they called in help from seven different countries, and they felt that they had never, ever had to do something like that before. So the damage to their infrastructure was off the scale. Siobhan Wynne is the regional manager for ESB, and she explains how unprecedented it was. Here she said, here it is.
I think at the height of the storm, we had almost 3,200 people on the ground working to repair damage. And in addition to that, then we had a further 1,300 people working in our offices and depots, assisting them. So planning all the work, organising the work, you know, basic things like when you bring that many people in to assist, there's a lot of logistics. But like, one for me that really stuck was the amount of hotel rooms we had to book, you know, to accommodate all of these people. So we ended up booking over 1,100 hotel rooms and B&Bs and various other accommodation to try and ensure that everybody had a bed for the night after doing a long, hard day's work.
But the other area where people were surprised, I think, about the impact of Storm Éowyn was water.
Yeah, I can't, even when I think about what Ishgairin are saying, I'm not too sure people realise that at what level it looks like. They are really trying to learn the lessons of this. I have to tell you that, because they have already decided on a few things, such as getting more generators. But they had 286 water treatment plants knocked out. They had 293 wastewater plants knocked out. The services to 51,000 premises, which is 130,000 customers, knocked out. They had already put in place temporarily before the storm came, because they knew it was coming, various generators. And because of that action, they saved nearly another 500,000 customers from being knocked out of their water, because they're so dependent on electricity. If you look right throughout the public sector, and you look, because this is actually published in a report every now and then, the usage of electricity and power by all public sector bodies. It is really interesting, I found, because I thought maybe the hospitals or the universities might be the highest. Ishgairin is off the scale. They are the biggest users of electricity in our public sector. And so when electricity goes, they really, really feel it. So what they've said in terms of what they learned is, you know, obviously they have ordered already 100 new generators. They're looking at making all of their, much more of their plants generator ready, be able to plug it in. They're looking also at, for the first time, maybe looking at using generators in reservoirs and wastewater plants and pumping stations. These were not done before. And they're looking to see all power sources. But one thing they say is that they don't think the batteries will really be strong enough for some of their water treatment plants. And that'll be an issue for some of the environmental experts. Peter Thorne of is the chair of the Climate Advisory Council's Climate Adaptation Committee, and he really feels strongly that, you know, kind of batteries are part of the future and the solution for all of this. Here's what he said.
In the immediate aftermath, there was an understandable reaction that we should put all the power lines underground. That's not practical. It's not economic. If you bury a power line underground, if there is a fault, it's far, far harder to actually get at it and resolve it. Now, there are underground power lines in much of the country, in many of the urban centres, and that's absolutely necessary and advisable. But in rural areas, particularly in very remote dwellings, undergrounding kilometres of cable for one property economically makes no sense. You can pay for that property to have solar panels. You can put an islanding switch that makes it possible to be off the grid. You could put tens of kilowatts of batteries in there. It would be far, far cheaper than undergrounding cable.
One thing that has been going on in the past 4 weeks, no matter how you were impacted, but particularly, you know, those people who were the worst affected, and there were so many of them, people thinking more about individual resilience as well as, you know, these companies having to develop resilience, because we know there will be more of these events in the future.
We do, absolutely. Now, it's really interesting that you're saying that, Anya, because one of the things which is coming up in September this year is the publication of new sectoral adaptation plans. Each sector of the economy in the country is supposed to come up with these plans for how they will become more resilient to climate change. And so one of the things they're watching this time is cascading events such as we've seen where ESB knocked out Ishka Erin and everything else. But so the lessons to be learned between them and to look much more closely at how they will interact so that they don't have these problems again. But one sector which really may be overlooked and is very, very important is that community sector, because it is a huge strength, and it was people pulling together that got each other through a lot of
that. The freezers and supermarkets that had generators where people could, you know, put the food that was otherwise thawing out in their own homes, the GAA halls, all of that.
Absolutely. And also coming together, even just socially, because of the damage that they were suffering. And Conor Murphy is an expert in climate at Maynooth University, and he thinks this issue of community should be way up there, front and centre. It's a real strength, and this is what he had to say.
But resilience is not just about speed of recovery of an electricity system. It needs to include people, communities, the social and the vulnerable within communities, and make sure we know what the needs are so that people aren't discommoded for long periods of time. We rely upon a lot of goodwill from communities, but what about people who aren't able to get back to their homes or didn't have a hot meal for a number of weeks? People who might be an elderly, have caring needs, or young babies, etc. We need to have better resources and engagement with the public in terms of what to do in an emergency. And that's about planning, that's about some foresight, but it's crucially about capacity and resources. A lot of the emphasis on climate change in Ireland is on mitigation, and that's really important. But we also have to accept the fact that climate change is happening, and these kinds of extremes are going to become more frequent in the future. So it's up to us to better plan and better prepare for when they happen.
It's all about the preparation then, George.
Well, it is, and there's an awful lot of work to be done on that. But the timing of that storm heightens people's awareness that when they come to produce these plans in September, they better be good.
George Lee, Environment Correspondent, thank you.